Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. Warning. We have learned that some liberals choke on even a small piece of Pastor Scheidbach's mind. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, my dear friends. I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse and your brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic. A gourmet meal for the mind.
The Army has brought charges against Bergdahl for desertion and behavior unbecoming a soldier when in the control of the enemy and stuff like that. Yes, hallelujah. Took long enough. I wonder how much the Obama White House was involved in stalling this. And it might be interesting to learn the story of how it finally broke through what I presume would have been a pretty formidable Obama wall. Obama's response? Well, when asked whether he has any regrets for releasing those, what was that, 5 or 6 known terrorists in exchange for this deserter? Well, his spokesperson said, not at all. And effectively went on and on about how we would do anything and everything we can to obtain the release of our soldiers. We stand with our soldiers and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Unbelievable. So let us revisit Bergdahl, shall we? One of the things about this that caught my attention right from the start was Obama's explanation for why it is that he acted without Congress. He claimed the opportunity presented itself and he had to act quickly and so he had no time to obey the law. This crowd are a bunch of lawless scoundrels. No, they really are. This is hilarity's excuse for sidestepping the law regarding emails. Do you remember, you know, it was not convenient to do it legally, so therefore she opted to do it illegally. And this, no doubt, followed up by something to the effect of, what difference does it make anyway, right? Another deeply embedded scandal in American politics today, Benghazi. But for the moment, back to Bergdahl. Obama was uncharacteristically in a hurry to make the deal that involved releasing, I think it was 5, I'm going to have to check that, run that down. I'm sure it was 5 known terrorists in exchange for the release of Bergdahl. You know, Obama's well known as a slow mover on things like this. He characteristically waits until he has consensus from his political advisors before he does anything, almost. For example, except play golf. He doesn't need any counsel in that matter. Did you know that Obama canceled an engaged operation on 3 separate occasions before he finally approved the May 2nd Navy SEAL mission? And that was after an agonizing 16-hour delay. He delayed initiating a rescue mission for James Foley for 30 days. Yeah, he spent that time quote, fretting over his image, end quote, as I read in one place. While, of course, playing golf, I understand he was worried that he would be, as I read here, carterized if the mission failed. Well, as we all know, and as we remember, James Foley was beheaded by Islamist terrorists, aided and abetted by the Obama administration. The Obama administration did not act toward James Foley the way he acted on behalf of Bergdahl. But when it came to making a deal to release 5 known terrorists in exchange for 1 traitor, Bergdahl, he said it was necessary to act quickly and decisively, and that's why he could not pass it by Congress first. And of course, the then spineless Congress let him get away with it. This has got to stop. Let's see now. I'm trying to figure this out. It takes 48 hours to ponder a Pentagon-approved plan to rescue an American held hostage by ISIS. But it takes no time at all to release known terrorists in exchange for a suspected traitor. You know, if it walks like a traitor and talks like a traitor and all that kind of thing. I remember questioning whether the lately Islamicized Pentagon would charge terrorist defecting Bergdahl with desertion. Meanwhile, at least one of the terrorists that Obama illegally released in exchange for this deserter son of an Islam dad has joined jihad. Well, well, well. What a surprise. Now, I remember back then even CNN picked up on it. Detainee swapped for Bergdahl suspected of militant activities. CNN.com. Of course, their concern was all about, when you read the article, was all about how this is going to be a headache for Der Fuhrer, Obama. I know I use the expression Der Fuhrer. They just use all the kiss-up language, too. Obama released terrorists, not suspected terrorists, but five known terrorists who were selected by the Taliban to be released from Gitmo in exchange for one American POW, Private Bergdahl, who went missing from his unit in 2009 while deployed in Afghanistan. And Obama did this illegally. The man's a criminal. Obama did not give the required by law 30 days notice to Congress before releasing the prisoners. Of course, Obama has dishonored the Constitution and snubbed our laws several times. He doesn't even obey his own laws, you know, the ones he signs into law, like Obamacare. I think Ted Cruz outlined, what, five or six different occasions in which Obama violated his own law? And now Ted Cruz tries to obey the law and they make a big stink about it. Remember, Obama consistently refused to enforce our immigration law, still does. He even sued states that attempted to enforce federal immigration law. Listen, you hear what I said? He brought lawsuits against states who were attempting to enforce federal immigration law, and also against states that attempted to pass state laws that effectively made federal law a state statute. It's unbelievable. This man's a law unto himself. And here we see it again. At first, he arrogantly asserted that he would offer no apologies for setting the Taliban terrorists free in violation of law. And apparently he's standing by it because he's sure not going to apologize now either. Now that Bergdahl's been formally charged with desertion of his post. Back when all this broke out, he was asked, would you apologize for bypassing Congress on this? And his language basically, absolutely no apologies. Obama explained he was acting in the tradition of an old American principle that we leave no soldier behind. Well, how about acting on an old American principle like nobody is above the law? How about that one? That wasn't too long ago when we were making a lot of noise about that. It only goes back to, well, say, the 60s. Nobody, Mr. President, is above the law. Negotiations for the release of Bergdahl started in 2011, and Congress was apprised of the effort to negotiate his release then, and then again in 2012. As part of the negotiations, a proof-of-life video was provided by the Taliban and made available to us through U.S. channels. Those negotiating for Bergdahl's release were motivated and energetically labored to pressure the White House to accept the deal offered by the Taliban. At least that's what we were told by Obama. He was under so much pressure. And all of this, quote, through channels, end quote. Because, you know, we don't negotiate with terrorists, except through channels. What is this channel of connection between ISIS and Washington? Ha! What, is it Norquist? Yeah. Oh, my. Way to go, Glenn. Norquist, is he part of the channel of connection between ISIS and U.S.? He's certainly connected to channels of money pouring in from terrorist organizations into his coffers. I called for an investigation into these people back then. I wanted this country to look into those who made this deal. I mean, let's find out who they are. A Muslim Brotherhood, perhaps? Oh, my goodness. Or some other, you know, terrorist-sympathizing organization, or to some radical mullah. Perhaps the Bergdahl family mullah. You know, yeah, that's right. You know, Bergdahl's dad's Muslim. Did you remember seeing the warm familial greetings between Obama and Mr. Bergdahl? All of it in Arabic. Neither one of them are Arab. In the Rose Garden, announcing the successful exchange of five major terrorists for Bergdahl? It's unbelievable. Do you remember the cold response to Foley's execution by ISIS? Well, I mean, what do you call it when a president gets news like the beheading of Foley? makes a perfunctory call to the parents, and then trots off to play 5 hours of golf. What was it, the 7th round of golf he played in that week? I mean, well, but hey, he was on vacation. It reminds me of that scene in What About Bob? You know, when Dreyfus gets the call that one of his patients committed suicide, he pauses and says something like, "How sad." And then, "Oh well, let's not let it ruin our vacation." And he turns off the lights and goes to sleep. That's Obama. Bergdahl is being charged with desertion and misbehavior before the enemy. Some of our troops died trying to find that guy. Remember when Susan Rice was sent out there with the line about Bergdahl having, quote, served with honor and distinction, end quote? Well, now this soldier faces two charges. First, desertion with the intent to shirk important or hazardous duty. And second, misbehavior before the enemy by endangering the safety of a command, unit, or place, end quote. Well, the first charge carries a maximum penalty of what? A dishonorable discharge, reduction to the lowest possible rank, total forfeiture of pay and allowances, and a possible 5-year prison term. Whereas the second charge carries a maximum penalty, including all the above, except this one, you can be thrown into the Huskow for life imprisonment. Soldiers died as a consequence of this man's desertion and misconduct. We know of one of the terrorists Obama released who went back into service to the terrorists, to jihad. You know, if you think about it in a manner similar to how Bergdahl's misdeeds endangered his command, exposed his fellow soldiers to great risk of harm, and in fact, resulted in the deaths of at least two of our finest, Obama's actions in this matter endangered America and Americans everywhere, and very probably even contributed to the ISIS execution of Foley. Obama must be stopped, my friends, and he must be held to account for these criminal acts. He cannot continue to be allowed to wander off post, move among our enemies, and endanger our security like Bergdahl did. That's something to think about, isn't it? Hold on through the break, my friends. I'll be right back.
The science of a brain massage. The brain masseur uses words like fingers to massage your gray matter, forming insights in the mind that stimulate the pituitary to signal the adrenal to release noneparephrine neurotransmitters and to fire these neurons through the sympathetic nervous system affecting the heart. The skilled brain masseur uses incisive logic to arrest our attention and nuanced razor-sharp rhetoric to cut away the tangled knots in our brains. When these knots are removed, the electrical impulse of stimulating insights fire the neurotransmitters so they can leap the synapse gaps. This generates a sparkling effect in the brain that can cause the countenance of a brain massage listener to glow. Additionally, sudden outbursts of energy caused by the release of glucose throughout the body increases the heart rate, while the pituitary gland in the brain releases all 5 types of dopamine at once. And this creates that sense of euphoria experienced by many brain massage listeners. And that's the science of a brain massage. Looking for an intelligent and engaged audience eager to show their appreciation to you for supporting one of their favorite radio shows? Over the past 10 years, the Brain Massage Radio Show has built up a large audience of dedicated listeners. Call Janet Fisher to help you reach this audience. 503-9945. Encounter God. The word encounter means to meet, to experience, to come face to face, to confront. Many encounters are routine happenstances, but even these can have a major impact on our lives. I'm sure each of you listening to this can think of encounters that made a difference in your life. But the greatest life-changing encounter in any life will be those encounters with God that make a difference. Perhaps you've encountered God in the past, but it's been a while since you experienced God in a vital, meaningful encounter. Renew your experience of God with a fresh encounter this year that will impact your life for spiritual growth. Perhaps you've never experienced God, and He doesn't seem real to you. You can encounter God in 2015, and when you do, your life will take on new meaning and purpose, and you'll know that God is real. Pastor Scheidbach's series of messages, Encounter God, are delivered Sunday mornings at the Lighthouse. Go to santamarialighthouse.org.
Devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the
air.
Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse and your Brain Masseur, and Paul Revere's lantern lighter. Lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, signaling the enemies on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. And they're working at it 24/7. Genocide is being perpetrated against Christians in Syria and Iraq and Yemen and elsewhere, and until these genocidal Muslim maniacs start slaughtering Muslims by the thousands, or somebody other than Christians, I guess this president's going to sit back and do nothing. Now, come on, you know I'm right. We get how hung up he is on political correct issues. He's afraid that if he steps in on behalf of Christians, he's going to be looked at as a Christian crusader. What a petty little worthless leader who can't act unless he thinks it's going to be perceived in some certain agreeable way to him. Unbelievable. Of course, that's never true with regard to how, let's say Christians in America might perceive his behavior. It's always only true with regard to how Muslims in this country and elsewhere might perceive his behavior. Remember the Yazidis trapped on that mountain and the fear that they would be slaughtered unless Obama moved quickly into action? And he committed some troops and went to their rescue. And I'm glad he did. He did the right thing that day. He deployed the second sword of Christ, the Romans 13 sword of justice granted to governments, ordained of God to execute wrath against evildoers. But what about the reports of Christians being exterminated through the region by ISIS, and reports, by the way, that are piling up day after day, body after body, and Obama does nothing? MSM yawns. Obama plays golf. The Christians are being murdered. And really, it seems the whole world just looks the other way. Someone with the ordained sword of Christ to execute wrath against these monsters needs to take that sword and put it to its use. It needs to be stopped. And I mean, yesterday. What is Obama waiting for? Is he waiting for an invitation from ISIS? Well, I would say they've sent it. When they started crucifying Christians, beheading them, raping their daughters, and murdering their fathers and mothers. Enough! Unsheathe thy mighty sword, America, ordained by God to execute wrath against these evildoers, or by God you will lose it. Hey, what's with this Carnegie Middle East Center coming out in support of Al-Qaeda? Yeah, an American-based think tank director, whose name is, surprisingly, Linda Khatib, comes out in this article for, and she's the director of this part of the Carnegie think tank, and she comes out saying that Jabhat al-Nusra is developing greater strength, you know, led by al-Zawahiri, by the way, former member of the al-Qaeda, and of course this Jabhat al-Nusra is basically al-Qaeda revived, reinvented. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I'm reading it right here in this article from the Carnegie Middle East Center by its director, suggesting that Jabhat al-Nusra might be a good ally for Western interests against ISIS. Well, guess what? It just so happens that Jabhat al-Nusra has all of the same objectives that ISIS has. The senior leadership of Jabhat al-Nusra, Nusra, however you say that, outlined their five strategic objectives in meetings held by them between 2011 and 2012. And they are, one, and I'm quoting, by the way, one, to establish a group including many existing jihadists, linking them together into one coherent entity. Two, to reinforce and strengthen the consciousness of the Islamist nature of the conflict, something Obama continually tries to deny. Three, to build military capacity for the group, seizing opportunities to collect weapons and train recruits, and to create safe havens by controlling physical places upon which to exercise their power. And then number four, to create an Islamist state in Syria. And then number five, to establish a caliphate in Bilad al-Sham, which is the Levant, or a revival of Muhammad's old Muslim empire. According to the Clarion Project, who prepared this report, these goals are to all intents and purposes identical to those of ISIS. Man, this business of partnering with people who want to murder Christians, oppress the land under Sharia law, destroy America and Israel, in order to stop a group who want to murder Christians, oppress the land under Sharia law, destroy America and Israel, is, I don't know, somewhere between stupid and insane. God deliver us from these unreasonable and wicked nutcases leading our country today and guiding them with this kind of advice. A leader of the Secular Aligned Rebel Brigade in 2012 was asked about appealing to Jabhat al-Nusra to help them defeat Bashar al-Assad. And he said, he had enough sense to say, look, we're not fighting Bashar al-Assad to go from living in an autocratic to a religious prison, end quote. This is so stupid. There has to be something else going on here. I can't believe they're that dumb. I mean, give me a break. Is anyone actually taking this seriously? Now, at present, Nusra is on the terrorist list, and U.S. troops have targeted their installations. And in the past, Carnegie was not so keen on getting into bed with al-Qaeda, as one of the articles I have here in my research file indicates. So what is with this new pragmatic pivot in the sympathies of, what's her name again, Linda Khatib, who is the director of this, you know, Carnegie Middle East Center think tank? I mean, coming from one, actually some would say the most influential think tank in the world. By the way, with channels of connections right on into the White House. And not surprisingly, there's good reason to believe the Carnegie Middle East Center has significant influence upon the thinking of Obama and company. I mean, you only have to read their position statements over the last, 10 years, I guess. And then compare them to statements Obama has made, and you might get the impression he's been reading this much of the time. Will Obama attempt to make an argument for assisting Nusra, /al-Qaeda? Or -al-Zawahiri? Not an easy sell, for sure, but weirder things have happened in this in the White House of the president alleged. Now, of course, it seems highly unlikely that Obama would pivot toward al-Qaeda. Wow. He certainly pivoted toward Islam, but now would he pivot then toward al-Qaeda in his effort to address ISIS? But one wonders, he is such a pragmatic man, you know. He's susceptible to this kind of logic. And here's the point, though, as I conclude the show today. Obama is so consistently friendly to those who scream death to America and consistently rude to our only true friend in that region, Israel, that you simply have to wonder whose side he is on. I'm certainly not the first to raise that question. When your president-elect is fully engaged in efforts to make a deal with an avowed enemy of our country that would position them to procure nuclear weapons, and then right in the face, right in the midst of our negotiations, right in Obama's face. I mean, the day after President Obama appealed in beneficent tones in his best Muslim-kissing tone, asking Iran to accept the deal, the leader of that other side, al-Khamenei, goes on TV and in a public speech approves the people's chant, "Death to America." Yeah, after Khamenei told a crowd that Iran would not capitulate to Western demands, the crowd began shouting, "Death to America! Death to America!" How did the Ayatollah respond? He said, quote, "Of course, yes, death to America, because America is the original source of this pressure," end quote. You've got to be kidding me. I mean, these guys are real sensitive to American demands, right? Fine. I think one of the demands we ought to place on the leadership of Iran is that they need to change the tone over there and stop encouraging the crazy Arabs among them to be in the street calling for the death to the entire country of America, or for Israel for that matter. I mean, who are these people? How can any sane American president make any kind of deal with people who are in the streets crying death to America? How about we give them a little death to Iran? I'm not saying we should do this, but I want you to think about something. What would those nincompoops think? I don't have time to define the word for you today. What would they think if millions of Americans gathered on the Washington lawn and cried, "Death to Iran! Death to Iran!" And then our president responds by saying something like, "Yeah, of course, yes, death to Iran, because Iran is the original source of all this nonsense going on in the Middle East right now." Right back to the first Ayatollah Khamenei in 1979, was it? Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's when the Islamic Revolution began, marking the beginning of the rise of the Islamic State. I mean, in modern history, obviously it dates on back to Muhammad and his pillaging and rampaging across the desert stands. Remember last week we discussed the moderate Muslim view of Islamic hegemony over the world and the rise of a world dominion holding Islamic caliphate. The revival of Muhammad's empire, the full realization of his vision for world dominion. And we learn that the moderate Muslims want the same thing that the so-called radical Muslims want. The only difference is they think the radicals are going about it the wrong way. The moderates basically are saying that they really don't have any authority to act in the way that they're acting unless an imam calls the fatwa or calls for the jihad by a fatwa. And it has to be, you know, a legitimate imam. You know, like Ayatollah Khamenei. Yeah, like him. He could do it. See. So let's give him the nuclear bomb? You've got to be out of your ever-loving mind, Mr. Obama, to be even thinking about trying to negotiate with these people in the first place while they've got a population out in the street screaming death to America. Yeah, the moderate Muslims want the same thing ISIS wants. They just think it, they ought to go about it a little differently. So one wonders, you know, Obama and Norquist. Obama and Norquist, well, they but do they want the same things that that the people in Iran want? They just think they should go about it a little differently? Right? They think the Muslim Brotherhood should run this worldwide Islamic caliphate. Anyway, last week I said I would deliver a message from the Bible explaining the biblical basis, supporting the idea that America has both the right and the responsibility to deny nuclear arms to Iran, and likewise the right and responsibility to intervene and stop ISIS from the genocide against Christians, or anybody else for that matter. Well, I ended up going off into other things and dealing with them, and it was all very interesting, but this coming Sunday night I can promise you that we will be addressing that specific topic. And by the way, we can chat a little bit after the service. I have lit the lamps in the church belfry arch, and now you call and let me know you see that they are on. Say lights on if you see the lights are on, and we'll ride like Revere and spread the warning. Essentially, that means you agree with what I'm saying, or you say lights off, which means you reject what I'm saying and disagree strongly. The number to call is 1-888-770-8000. That's 1-888-770-8000. Now leave a message for me in our listener response hotline. If you prefer it, you may write to me by email. Go to thebrainmassageshow.com. It's all one word, lowercase, thebrainmassageshow.com. You'll find a place there to send me an email message. If you're in a hurry when you call, just say lights on, hang up. You can even go to the website and just click lights on and send. But I do appreciate the feedback, and it's helpful to us as we plan for the future of the Brain Massage Show. God bless you. God save America. And I'll see you in church.
Encounter God. The word encounter means to meet, to experience, to come face to face, to confront. Many encounters are routine happenstances, but even these can have a major impact on our lives. I'm sure each of you listening to this can think of encounters that made a difference in your life. But the greatest life-changing encounter in any life will be those encounters with God that make a difference. Perhaps you've encountered God in the past, but it's been a while since you experienced God in a vital, meaningful encounter. Renew your experience of God with a fresh encounter this year that will impact your life for spiritual growth. Perhaps you've never experienced God, and He doesn't seem real to you. You can encounter God in 2015, and when you do, your life will take on new meaning and purpose, and you'll know that God is real. Come to the Lighthouse this Sunday morning to hear Pastor Scheidbach present another exciting and inspirational message in a series entitled Encounter God.
Enjoying your brain massage experience? Do you wish everyone could? Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and make your donation today, or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457. For a complete brain massage experience, tune in Saturdays at 7:30 a.m.